Welcome to the Women and Wealth Podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women and Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Today, she's got a special guest, and that is EJ Hong. EJ is a certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law by the State Bar of California Board of Legal Specialization. EJ has been practicing law since 1990 and is a member of the State Bar of California. She has practiced law in Washington, D.C., and in California. She earned her law degree from Washington College of Law, the American University, Washington, D.C., and EJ's professional experience includes being a clerk for a federal judge and a law firm in D.C. Good afternoon, ladies. How are you?
Eric, it's Esther. We're doing great. I'm so excited to have EJ here with us. She's a lot of fun and also very smart with wonderful experience to share about women in transition.
Hi, this is EJ.
EJ, welcome to the show. What she didn't say is that you're tough, because if you practice law in Washington, D.C., I'm not messing with you. that's gotta be a tough territory to do work in.
It was great experience, and I learned a lot. Wonderful. And I also, when I was working for the federal government, I also worked on the White House, the helicopter.
Really?
And yes, yes.
What do you mean you worked on the White House helicopter?
I was working for the Navy, and the Navy was a procuring agency for the White House helicopter, and so I was the lawyer for the contracting officer in charge of the government contracts. So that was really fun. I got to actually go into the helicopter. And I have a mug to show it.
Nice.
My children don't think that actually I did it, but I have a mug to show that.
That's all the proof you need. I'm sure any lawyer will tell you that. Just bring a mug and that's it. That's evidence. All right. Well, I'm going to just turn it over to you, Esther. I know you guys are going to have a great conversation today, and I'm here to learn. So here we go.
Well, you will learn. So, EJ, before we go deeper, can you tell us a bit more about what got you into the field of estate planning to begin with?
So, thank you. So, in law school, I really liked wills, trusts, and probate law. But as I said earlier, I went into government contracts, and I really liked that. I was a litigator in D.C. doing that. When we moved out here to California in 2001, I had to decide what I was going to do with my life. And so I took the California bar, and then my friends asked me to do their estate plan. And so that's how I got into falling in love with estate plan again. And then I realized that I was actually really meant to be in this field. My mother died when I was 17, and she didn't have an estate plan, and so the estate planning did not go well. It did not go well for us, my brother and me. So it was really meant to be that I would be in this position where I could really try to help people, and as you try to help women in transition, to try to empower them to make sure that they're protected and also their heirs are protected.
And when you say it didn't go well for you and your brother, can I ask what you mean?
Sure. We ended up not getting the house. So that was not what my mother had planned.
So what happened to it?
It went to relatives that shouldn't have gotten it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Well, so and at that time we didn't even know. And so I think it dawned on me when, you know how certain things happen in your life and you go back and you realize, wow, I was really meant to do this. And it dawned on me when I opened my own law office, focusing and specializing in estate planning, that I was meant to do this.
Right. I know. I can really relate to that. Those who have listened to earlier podcasts, it's like the same, you know, I went through a household where the financial planning was very non-existent, and it was really impactful in terms of how much it changed my life. And so I can really relate to what you're saying about you're finding yourself doing this work, and it's so exciting to help other people get a vision and a view forward that without you, they wouldn't have had. And it really helps them have a very sturdy foundation. And estate planning, again, for those of us who are engaged in the field, from my position, it is working with clients and making sure that their estate plans match their financial plans. It's exciting. But for many people, estate planning isn't exciting. What do you suggest to people who think that, you know, their perception of estate planning is it's just very dry and dull? And I don't hear it so much anymore, but I used to hear often, well, it doesn't matter because I'll be dead. Who cares? How do
right.
you respond?
And morbid. People also, yes. right. And there's a lot of fear around it. I took a self-defense class, and I actually, last year, I had scheduled a self-defense class for our daughters. And what the two things, and you learn tools about how to defend yourself, but the two mental tools or mental concepts that I learned from that class was, one was awareness, and the second is confidence. In estate planning, I think that we need to make sure that we're aware. We're aware of what we're not aware of. And I think that there is obviously a certain thinking about self-defense that we don't either need it or that it's like we have it's killing people. And I think that's the same way with estate planning, that we're not fully aware of how we need tools to protect ourselves, and that that we need to protect ourselves and our loved ones, and that it is not about facing death or not talking about morbid things, but also talking about whom you love, whom you want to protect, and why you want to protect, and what is it that you want to protect from. So that's part of the awareness. And I think secondly is confidence in knowing that you are finding the right professionals to help you, and that you're not doing something that is it's not going to work for you, or that it's going to hurt you. It's going to help you.
So that's a great point in terms of awareness and protecting yourself. So if we talk a bit more about, let's use the example of a woman who's getting divorced and she has two minor children. And what types, it's a very general, but a common example, what types of things might this woman not be aware of that she needs to protect in her estate planning?
So first of all, is that if she becomes incapacitated, as she is now a single mother, that she would want to make sure that she has people in place whom she trusts to not only take care of her finances and then take care of her children, but also be the guardians of her children. And so if her ex-husband, the father of the children, he has joint custody or he's the biological father, then the court will defer to the biological parent for guardianship. So it's not unheard of, but it's most of the time the guardianship will go to the biological parent. But the mother may not want the trust assets, the money that will go toward the children. She may not want her ex-husband or the father of the children to manage it. And so she would need to make sure that she names the proper trustee and the proper people in charge of the children's money to make sure that that's protected.
Do you find that women have a hard time naming those people to be trustees? I have found that, well, sometimes that people just assume, okay, it's going to be a family member. But this whole issue of trusteeship is a bit challenging, right? Because people don't realize what they're signed somebody else up for. How do you guide your clients in terms of naming the right trustees?
So, and right, naming the right trustees is really a critical decision. If there are some doubts about naming an individual as a trustee, I will caution my clients that you need to trust your trustees. And so instead of putting barriers or legal limitations in place for the trustee to act, it's better to choose a trustee whom you trust and then give them discretion because you trust them. And so if a client doesn't have an individual whom they trust to be the trustee, then actually a corporate trustee like a bank are excellent choices for to be successor trustees. The bank has its own compliance, and it has they always have two trustees working on your matter. If an employee, first, you know, they embezzle the funds, the bank can make you whole. It's an institution that that will continue. That an individual could die. There are private fiduciaries also who are who can be trusted to be trustees, and they're a very good choice too. And so I will introduce a variety of options for the clients if they don't have an individual, or even if they do have an individual as a backup to that individual.
Right. And I know that the private trust company that I use for a lot of the custody of my clients' assets, they can do successor trusteeship also, which is nice because clients have liked it because then I can stay on the account. I've been asked to be successor trustee and I'm not able to do that, but the custodian can act as corporate trustee, and that way I can still stay engaged at the account if need be. One of the things, we worked on a case recently, EJ, and it was a woman who was divorced, and she had purchased a property with a boyfriend. And tell us a little bit about putting others' names on deeds of property.
Generally, I would say it's a bad idea. I've gotten phone calls from brother and sister team who purchased property together, and then the brother got married and they started living in the house and the sister wanted out of the house. And so then there will be a reassessment of property taxes because there's no sibling to sibling exemption, property tax exemption.
So I'm going to pause for a second and even jump in. There's a reassessment of property tax, but nobody has changed. The house hasn't changed.
Well, so if the brother buys out the sister, there is a transfer of 50% of the assets. And so there will be a reassessment unless there's an exemption. And so there's a spousal exemption if you're legally married. Mm-hmm. And in California, if you're domestic registered partners, then there's an exemption, but not a partner to partner, nor sibling to sibling. And there is no common law marriage in California. And so in that case, if in the case where you were mentioning, if let's say that the client wanted to buy out the interest of the partner, not only would there have to be a fair market value transaction, but then the property would also get reassessed. And in the meantime, if the partner had creditors, creditors would then put a lien against the house. And so it could affect your property interest to the extent that you have a lien on the house. So it just gets really messy. Generally, I don't recommend the co-ownership. If you're going to purchase the house and then get reimbursement of expenses or rental, it's something equivalent to rent that the other person can contribute toward the house. But I find that there are more issues with co-ownership than is really, I think, really worth it. So the other thing too, in that case, was the house was in joint tenancy, which means that because it has a right of survivorship, if she died first, her 50% of the property would have gone to the partner, not to her kids, which is not what she wanted. Mm-hmm. And so that's the other thing, is that people they're not aware of ownership and how it passes on to the other owner or to your descendants.
Thank you. That's so helpful to talk about even account registrations. I've been talking about this with clients for many, many years, and joint tenants with rights of survivorship, everyone is familiar with it, but people often forget what happens at one's death, who owns the asset and how that transfers. So I appreciate you bringing that up. And I'd like to switch just a little bit, but still staying with the theme of divorce. What are the issues that one, when someone is contemplating divorce, what are the issues that one should be considering?
So when a divorce is filed, everyone should know that there is something called ATRO. It's an automatic temporary restraining order. When you file a divorce papers in the court system, the ATRO comes into effect. What that means is that a spouse, the divorcing spouses, cannot transfer assets without the consent or notification to the other spouse. And of course, the reason for that is because in the middle of a divorce, spouses could abscond with the money or, you know, move it somewhere. And if the account wasn't in joint tenancy, but it really is community property, but it was in the sole name of one of the spouses, we don't want assets to be hidden or taken away. Mm-hmm. And so once you file a divorce action, then you can't even really designate beneficiaries on your beneficiary designation. Mm. So I think there should be some counseling before the divorce is actually filed for how to divide up the assets. And if it's a amicable divorce, I think that financial counseling around how you want your assets to be divided, and even dividing up the assets before, if we can get an agreement done before the divorce papers are filed with the court, that might be helpful as well. I'm not a divorce attorney. I'm just letting you know what it is from the estate planning side. When I have clients who come into me before the divorce and they want to do some estate planning, the ATRO, the automatic temporary restraining order, does not apply, and transfers between spouses are not taxed. And so if there could be an amicable settlement of property, then we're not worried about the ATRO. But if you're already in the middle of a divorce, then what I do for clients in that stage of life is the client has a choice. One, you could create a will, and that you don't need to have consent or give notification to the other party of that you're creating a will. And what that does is that it allows you to dispose of, if you were to die in the middle of the divorce proceeding, mm-hmm. What would happen without a will is that it would go to their surviving spouse and your children, because you're not legally separated. You're not legally divorced. Mm-hmm. And so a will would allow you to dispose of your assets in the manner that you choose. Now, it would go through probate, and we can talk about probate in just a minute, but it would go through probate, but it's still better than having nothing. The other thing that we can do is what I frequently do, and that is an unfunded living trust. So we will create a trust, and if you funded it, which means that you transfer your assets into your trust, then that violates ATRO. But if we create the trust and we list the assets that you intend to put into the trust, but we don't actually fund it. You can't retitle assets, and we don't actually retitle the house into the name of the trust. But in case you were to pass away before the divorce is final, that would be tragic. But if that were the case, then what would happen is that your assets would pass through the trust, and I don't want to go into all the complex details, mm-hmm. but you'd have to get a Hegstead order, which is a fast basically a fast track through the probate system. And so it doesn't go through full probate. It bypasses the full probate system. And so it's better than a will in the sense that it doesn't go through the full probate system. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we'll talk about, if you are calling me in that situation, and I have done a lot of these, we'll talk about the pros and cons of both ways. A lot of my clients choose to do the unfunded, the living trust, because then after the divorce is final, they can come back to me and we can just update the trust. Mm. Now that the divorce is final, we would put the asset, we would transfer the assets that we need to into the trust and then update the marital status is now being divorced. And this way you can, as I said earlier, you can make sure that your guardians have the right trustees, mm-hmm. that you choose, and that they're, if you have children, that their assets are protected. So those are the things. I have a client who called me and she's contemplating divorce, but she and her husband are going to agree on the assets that they're going to divide. They're going to go to a mediator and then they'll file the divorce papers. And so that's, you know, that's also another way to handle it.
Yeah, it seems like that would be such a useful approach to start thinking about how the assets would be separated and also putting a structure in place. I have found in my experience that for many women or same-sex couples, it's such an overwhelming process that it's hard for them to think about both sort of ends of the situation, both what I'm dealing with now with my living situation and changing it, as well as the estate planning. How involved is it to create that type of a trust or to have those meetings? I guess it can vary, but
I try to make it as painless as possible, but it's not always easy to address these issues. And that's where I think going back to awareness is being aware of what you want to protect and being aware of what will happen if you don't do certain things and being able to face it confidently. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and not to run away from things that make you fearful. The process in my office is that you, I think most, some people find actually the questionnaire that I have to be, somebody described it as a financial colonoscopy. So some find that daunting. But, you know, it's important for you to get, for the clients to know what you have and whom you like and whom you hate. And mm-hmm. for me to know that too. And so I think if you work with any estate planning attorney or a financial advisor, you're going to have to do a form of some kind.
Right.
And the basic data. And then we will meet, and usually my clients are usually laughing during the meeting.
I can see why. I know you. I can imagine.
And I try to bring some levity to the discussions, and then they would come in for the final signing. We email drafts of the documents for review. So people also have this concept, and thank you for bringing that up, Esther. People have this concept that it's this long, drawn mm-hmm. out, and you know we're going to have to see the blasted lawyer so many times, and it doesn't have to be that way. It can be pretty quick, and it may be a little bit of pain. It's what the doctors call, there'll be a little bit of pressure. it might be a little bit painful at the time, but it'll go away.
And I think as we're wrapping up this session, we're going to do another one. But as we're wrapping up this session, I think the other thing that I would like you to address is sometimes people, you know, especially in times of transition, and if it's early on, someone has just is either, as we're just talking about, contemplating divorce or the divorce is final, life changes and adjusts. And how easy is it to address changes that come up? Because clients can really agonize over these things. And I appreciate that they're giving it good thought. What I try and say is I encourage them to say, you know, whatever you put in here, it can be changed. Just it's more important from my perspective to get a document done than it is to have it perfect in every single situation. But I also appreciate what you bring professionally to look at different situations. So how do you address the adjustability or the mutability of the document if as their life changes moving forward?
And you brought up a really good point. I often tell my clients my personal story about my mother and saying that a plan, a less than perfect plan, is better than no plan at all. Mm-hmm. And so we do the best that we can. And I have clients who, most of my clients are, or all of my clients are just really high, they're successful, hardworking perfectionists. And so, you know, they'll get stuck on trying to make it perfect. And we can't see into the future. And it's important for people to know that this is a living document. It's like if you were writing a diary and you are writing your wishes today, you would write a diary 5 years from now that would be different. So if you thought of it as, and my tagline in my office is estate planning is an act of love. So if you really thought of the estate plan as a love letter, then you would see that you might change in future years about how, you know, you have different trustees or you have different people to take care of the assets or you have different concerns about the children. Most of my clients don't have to revise their plan that often, but I do have clients who revise their plans quite frequently. So it would be a phone call to my office, and then we would discuss the changes, and then I would let them know what the fee is before I begin the work. And so it's many times I can even send them the documents via email and they don't even have to come back into the office. Sometimes I don't want to say that that's the case all the time. So it doesn't have to be as painful as people think of it. But I also think that an important thing for women to keep in mind is that you need to have a team of people, a team of professionals who are supporting you. And so through your different transitions in your life, you need to make sure that you have good tax advisors and financial advisors and that you trust your estate planning attorney. And maybe you don't talk to your estate planning attorney for years, but at least you trust that estate planning attorney. It's really important to have a team of people around you to create that team of professionals around you who are looking out for you and whom you can rely on for awareness and to build your confidence.
Thank you so much, EJ. You've shared so much with us, and we've still got more to cover. We're going to do a second session talking more about the transitions of marriage and of business success. But I really appreciate what you've spoken about today in terms of sort of gotchas that people don't think about, considerations in advance of divorce and after divorce, and all the ways that they can protect themselves and really care for the ones that they do love through the act of estate planning. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. And can I just say one last word?
Sure.
And that is check your beneficiary designation.
I'm going to come back to that.
Yes,
that's
but
true.
Please, if you don't get to the second session of this, please check your beneficiary designations on your retirement plans and your life insurance. Okay. Thank you so much, Esther.
Thank you very much, EJ.
This was a fantastic podcast. I will say one thing that I am very happy about, that I was not drinking during the colonoscopy reference. You guys did fantastic. I look forward to the second podcast. So I thank you guys for your time. And I want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This makes it much easier to share these podcasts with your friends and family. Again, thanks for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.